What's up, guys? Welcome back to Small Talk What's at the podcast with your host, Sydney Matone. Whoa, it's been a full month since I last talked with you guys, so I think it's time we do a little bit of a regroup. So basically for me, January was quite the emotional roller coaster, so I decided to take a bit of a backseat, and it was like the best thing I've done for myself in a really long time. We all know that at the beginning of a new year, there's like a lot of pressure that society puts on us to make New Year's resolutions and be the best version of yourself and hustle every day. And truthfully, I was processing 2021 still, and by no means did I want to speed up. I just wanted to slow down. So I decided to listen to my body, and really, I felt no guilt. It was actually the healthiest thing I could have done for myself. I learned so much about myself, and I was just like taking the time that I needed. So I encourage you guys to do the same if you're in that same situation. You know, to carve out time for yourself, even if it lasts a few weeks, like for me, it's so healthy and so needed. Now with that said, I'm very excited to get back into the podcast, connect with you guys, connect with my guests. So with that, let's meet this week's guest. So this week I'm chatting with OG food influencer and native New Yorker Jeremy Jacobowitz. We talk about his former work as a television producer, being an assistant to celebrity chef Bobby Flay, designing the well-known mouthwatering food blog Brunch Boys, and how today all of his past lives have come into one. We even go into how content creation has shifted in the past decade while providing some great insight along the way. So, for anyone wanting to enter a creative field, looking to start your own business, or just looking for some amazing food recommendations from all over the world, which we get into, this episode is definitely for you. Now sit back and let's meet Jeremy. Hey guys, I'm here with Jeremy now, and we're just talking about how he made a trip to Westchester to visit his parents. So how's that going?
Good. I was there today, my parents and my dog, you know, so 50-50 on what I'm up there for.
Yeah. And you said you were filming something for P.F. Chang's. What's going on with that?
Oh yeah. Just a nice little TikTok campaign deal. And it's fun. It was like 5 minutes from their house, and like ever in growing up being at P.F. Chang's, I loved it. I mean, listen, hashtag ad, whatever. I thought it's better than the Chinese food I get in Westchester and in Williamsburg. So whatever.
Hey, we're getting it from the best. So I believe you. I haven't been to a P.F. Chang's in years. So
no, me either. I was like excited to get back there. I was like, oh damn, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Love to hear it. Love to hear it. How's your new year going, by the way? How is the 2022 start?
We're less than a week in, but I'm feeling good. I already got Omicron. So, you know, it takes the pressure off my life a little bit. I'm like, oh, I got it. I could live free. I'm boosted and I have Omicron immunity. I feel like a superhero right now.
Yeah. I keep saying that I feel like the benefit of a lot of people getting sick now is that hopefully everyone gets like antibodies, and then like in the future, hopefully less people are getting sick. So.
Absolutely. Listen, I a full on proponent. If you guys see my Instagram, of getting vaccines and getting boosted and doing whatever, but you know, if this is what it takes, this is what it takes.
Sure. Sure. And it's weird too. I feel like this year for a lot of people, like the start of 2022, we definitely want like more positivity. Cause like, you know, the tail end of 2021 was rough for a lot of people. A lot of people are getting sick and the holidays were kind of a bust. So I'm definitely looking to more like positive vibes. Cause it's been rough for a lot of people.
I'm all positive. My whole thing is like, you know, I talk to people and they're like, you know, life hasn't been the same in 2 years. How do you even get out of bed? And I'm just like, I don't know, but that's life, whether it's Delta or COVID or whatever it is. Life is sort of about things changing and things being challenging and figuring it out and staying positive. If you wake up every day and you know, only look at the negative, you're only going to have a negative outlook. Listen, I'm someone that wakes up every single day and puts the news on. It's probably not healthy, but I still look at the positive, like, okay, maybe things aren't the ideal way I want them to be, but it's never going to be the ideal way you want it to be. So just like get over it, you know, like
sure.
Try and see positive and positive things, and like it'll absolutely change your outlook.
Yeah. And I also think like life is full of so many different seasons. And if you're in a season like where it's kind of a funk right now and things aren't going your way, like just try to like learn the lessons while you're in it. But like you said, it's never going to be 100% perfect. Even people that it looks like everything's great, like they'll find fault in their own lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. So let's go into like your background and your story, because you have a pretty cool story. So we know you grew up in New York. Where in the city?
Yeah. So I was born in Brooklyn, and then we moved to Westchester when I was six. So I would say I was born in Brooklyn, but grew up in Westchester, but then went to NYU. So I've never lived more than, you know, 15 miles from New York City or whatever it is.
Yeah. And then what was that like growing up? I mean, were your passions always food or did you have other passions?
I mean, I always loved food. Like from a very, very, very young age, I ate everything. Like the first solid food I ever ate was Chinese food. I remember being five and in Brooklyn, like the place I'd want to go eat it all the time is Thai food. So it was always something that I loved. And I grew up cooking and I grew up watching Food Network and food shows and blah, 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 blah. I've never thought of it to be a career just because I don't know, to me, like when you think about being a career in food and the, growing up in the 90s, it was like, well, be a chef. And I never really, as much as I love cooking, I never wanted to be a chef. So I didn't think there was an outlet for it at all. But I grew up loving sports. So I ended up, I studied sports management at NYU and worked in sports TV before I went into the food world. It was just sort of happenstance that I ended up in the food TV world when I wanted to leave sports. And I was like, oh, wow, I love this. Like, I didn't realize that I wanted to work in food TV, but it kind of made sense. I love food and I love food TV and I love TV in general. And I was like, wow, it took me doing it to finally connect the dots.
Where food TV, what network was that on?
So, I mean, I just say food TV in general, just because.
Oh, I thought freelance. That was an actual like name of a
yeah.
show.
Okay. No. So I was Bobby Flay's PA. So a lot of Food Network stuff, but then Cooking Channel and FYI and Travel Channel and Destination America, all over the cable network spectrum, okay. I guess.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So how did that opportunity with Bobby Flay like come about?
So after I worked in sports TV for a year starting college. So I interned at SNY, which is the Mets network. I worked at WCBS here in New York as a producer. I worked at WWE. And when I left, I'm like, I just want something else. At this point, you know, there weren't all these digital outlets that were there. In fact, there were no digital outlets really doing video. And there weren't that really any major cable outlets either in sports. It was just sort of ESPN at the time. So it's just like, all right, well, what else is there in TV? Because I love TV. Where else can I go?
Right.
And I sort of had to start over again a little bit. But basically, the first show I got hired on was a show called, still on the air, crazily enough, Worst Cooks in America. And I met Bobby on that show and I was just PA. I was just like taking out the trash and doing whatever, but I ended up meeting him on that show. And he's like, hey, listen, I have my own production company. At that time, he was doing a lot more shows and a lot more traveling. So he personally hired me to be his PA. And then that was it. I sort of like, obviously he doesn't film 24/7. So I would have to pick up gigs between his gigs, but I tried to at least set my schedule to work on his shows. Cause being his PA is like the best job in the world. Like my job is like, there's a lot more to it, but on a very broad level, it was basically just entertain him and make sure he's happy. Cool. You know, like we go to cities and it'd be like, hey, Jeremy, Bobby, it's like a 3-hour break in the middle of the day. Just find whatever the best restaurant is in the city and go eat. It's like, okay. Oh, I could be taking out the trash or driving trucks or I could go do this. Yeah. I'll have this job. Thanks.
Literal dream job, but but I don't understand, like, how is a guy that's taking out trash, how does he get Bobby Flay's attention to be his personal PA? Like, what did you, were you like making small talk with him? Like what was going on?
So basically what happened was on that show, they hired someone to be Bobby's PA that wasn't comfortable driving. She wasn't from New York City and it didn't really think it'd be an issue because where was he going? They sort of assumed like we had drivers, we'd have car service, pick him up in the morning and drop him off. But it ended up that Bobby wanted to go do shit. Like he'd have a long break in the middle of the day. And he's like, I want to go to lunch. Or like, hey, I got to go get my iPhone fixed. I got an hour and a half break. Let's go to the Apple store. Or I got a quick meeting. Let's go.
Yeah.
So it just ended up that because she couldn't drive, I ended up driving him.
Got it. Okay. I know when I think of Bobby Flay, just because I was born a little later than you were, I think of Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off. Do you remember that Disney Channel movie?
No.
So in that movie, it was a new, I think it might've came out in the late 90s or early 2000s, but it was this movie where like this kid is trying to win this cooking competition. And then at the end of the movie, like they get to meet like this celebrity chef. And in the movie, it was Bobby Flay. So
this is ringing a bell, actually. Okay. I might have to look this up. I like the last time I probably saw it was in 1999. So it had vanished until this very moment. I'll look it up after.
Yes, for sure. Okay, cool. So now how long were you a PA for him?
I was his PA for like 2 or 3 years, maybe. And then I started producing while I was still his PA on other gigs, but then produced for another 2 or 3 years.
Okay. So what was like the big venture after you left him?
It was organic after I left, and the idea wasn't always to be a CPA. As much as I liked that job, I wanted to make more money and be creative and work and be a producer. Yeah. So it really was just sort of that transition of, which was nice, was working with him. I just organically ended up in these creative conversations, and I was able to learn. Not that I was a part of them, but I was there and I was listening and I was seeing how shows are made. You have to remember with Bobby is, he's not only the talent on his shows, he's the executive producer on all of his shows. Mm. So he's part of all these creative meetings that most talent generally wouldn't be a part of. So I just got to be part of that and see the creative process. And then it was an easier transition of, well, okay, Jeremy's learning, we trust him, he's smart, cool, let's advance him and see what he can do producing. So it ended up producing like food travel shows, food competition shows, cooking shows, all that stuff.
What was one of your favorite projects you worked on?
I think just like your dream when you work in food TV is to be on a food travel show. And while mm-hmm. it was a lot harder than I thought it would be, especially when I did three of them in a row, it was probably the first one I did. It was a show called What the Fung with the Fung brothers, F-U-N-G.
Okay.
I'm used to people being like, what the fuck is that? While that show was very demanding and didn't super work out the way I wanted it to, it was like, wow, this is what I wanted to do, travel around the country and eat food. Now I get to do that every second. I get to travel around the world and do that. But the only possibility I ever saw to do that was being a producer on food travel shows. There weren't influencers and all this other stuff. The way to do that was that, and I did it. So it opened up my eyes. So like, wow, I really love this. There's parts of it I don't love, which is why I left TV. Right. But that idea of traveling and eating and getting into kitchens was there from the beginning. I just found a different outlet for it now.
Were you the face of it, or you were just doing production behind the scenes?
No, I was just a producer, but okay. it helps because it's still the same thing. Essentially the same thing I do now. It's like, I wrote out the scripts, I researched the restaurants, I talked to the chefs, I put together the segments, I knew what I wanted in the segments. Now on TV, I had everyone else do my vision. I had someone else shooting it and running audio and editing and on camera and and then the producers just sort of like tell other people what to do, mm-hmm. where now I have to do all of that. But at its core, it's the same thing I do now.
Yeah.
It's better that I have full control, but it's also worse where I have to do everything.
Sure. But I think the way you did it though, like starting off behind the scenes and now like, obviously you're the face of everything, but like now you have that insight. So if you're giving direction, well, I know that you do everything, but I think it's a great place to
giving myself direction.
True. True. But I think starting off that way versus the other way around, like being the face and then getting into production would have been maybe a little bit more of a challenge.
Maybe. I mean, I think it's just a bigger thing of like, listen, I think if you want to be a content creator or do Instagram or do whatever. Like I always say, like use your cell phone. You could figure it out. Like watch a ton of, I learned basically almost more. I learned watching YouTube than I did even working in TV, which is crazy. But to me, it's like, I don't use a cell phone because what adds value to what I do is that I have an actual production experience.
Yeah.
So I make little things that, yeah, if we expanded it, it would be on TV. Obviously, I put a little social media spin on my own spin and blah, blah. It's not exactly like you would see a TV show, but at its core, it still is very backed by what we did in TV. So I use real cameras, I use real lights, I use wireless audio. Like I make sure that my production is a step up from everyone else to just try and stand out and be different. I think coming from production, I knew what it was supposed to be, which was really, really helpful.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like a lot of people, like it's cool because now on TikTok, you see that like quality isn't always like at the forefront. So I think being able to like, you know, so I think like having that, like definitely, you know, you're putting your own spin on it. And yes, listen, people could say whatever they want, that like no one cares about aesthetic anymore. People like to look at pretty things. They like to look at like nice quality things. And so I think having that really can like help your brand stand apart from the rest.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what you just remember. It's like, it's not, I don't view what I do as success because things go viral. And I think like that's become a lot of social media, which is totally fine. That's not, I mean, yes, I want every video I do to go viral, but I don't produce that way. I don't think my videos are go viral. I produce in terms of like what I'm happy with and what's quality. And I think like what helps me there is, yes, standing out to an audience that sees a lot of the same thing over and over and over again, but just brands. I mean, a lot of my brand deals are
right.
These brands get to own the content too. And that is honestly a way bigger value than even the stuff I post on Instagram. So I could quadruple deals because I'm able to provide professional level photos and videos to these brands.
Yeah. Well, so if
like
I,
that is a huge, that's a huge advantage for me when I do this stuff. And that's out of that, that's why I use all these cameras and figure it out.
Sure. I was going to say that, like, if I were a brand and I'm kind of picking which influencers to work with, I would rather work with an influencer that has like a well-established curated brand. You could see it across all their videos as opposed to the one kid that got that one viral video. It doesn't make sense to me.
I would say there's a mix of it. I wouldn't say for one viral video, but even if your content creator that is able to go viral, great, work with them right. too. That's the thing with these brands is like, when people ask me like, oh, like, do you compete with people? It was like, yeah, I mean, everything's competition, but like I'm much more harder myself because I find that like, someone else doesn't have to fail for me to succeed. Mm. So it's like, and the, you know, the tide rises also like what has been with the rise of TikTok, you saw a huge influx of like brand new creators and influencers, or whatever you want to call them. And where there's the potential for me to get lost in a shuffle a little bit. Maybe I'm not at the top of everyone's list anymore because it went from 10 people to 10,000 people they could pick from. I think that what's been nice is it's made us all more valuable. Mm. You would think it would do the opposite because more people to pick from, but we all, every day we understand our value more and more and more. And it takes everybody asking for more money for the entire industry to change. And that's honestly what's happened. It's also happened is that they've overestimated their value, where I generally underestimate my value just because like, I don't know, at my core, I'm like, oh, who am I? You know, I'm like, I'm confident, but I still have that weird thing of like, oh, I don't know. I always like put a lot of pressure on myself. A lot of the newer creators are people like you mentioned that like had one viral video and then go to brands and ask for a bajillion dollars. Mm-hmm. And the brand's like, yeah, we're going to go back and work with the person that we've worked with for years and doesn't charge anywhere near you. Still charges enough. I don't, you know, take nothing. Yeah. But like it's helped where I've been able to raise my prices and still come in significantly lower than people that really don't have the value that I bring. So it's helped me, honestly.
Yeah. And I think that's something, especially as you're growing as a content creator, like learning like how to price yourself. You obviously want to, you know your value, but at the same time, like it's a competition at the end of the day. So you want to make sure you're not going so high where someone's like, okay, well, mm-hmm. we'll pay somebody else and not you. So I think that's good right. advice.
And I don't want to come in. So like, I don't want to, and yes, we could all, it's to me, it's a big thing of like making sure we're all on an even playing field where there is no set rules for how much we all get paid, but it's just all of us sort of having an understanding of what we all sort of make. And it's like, okay, well, if you ask for that much and you have this X many followers more than me, all right, I guess I could come in around here. And then it's just up to the brands to pick who they think is best rather than us competing for who's going to take the shittiest deal, which I think is really important.
Yeah, agreed. And shifting gears a little bit. So let's talk about like the brand Brunch Boys. Like where did this idea come from? How did it start? What was the inspiration? I'll let you take it.
It was basically just, there was no idea for it to be a brand or an influencer or creator or any of that shit because like mm-hmm. it didn't, none of that stuff exists. I mean, brands existed, but the idea of it didn't exist. I'm always just a person that's bored when I'm not working and someone that always has a lot of creative frustration. So always what I told myself was, and I freelance in TV. So I'd always have time off between gigs, whether it was a few days or a few weeks or whatever, hopefully it was just a few weeks. But when I was between jobs, I never wanted to sit there. So I was just like, I always had little projects and I was like, I'll make some videos. Food videos. And I just wanted something to sink my teeth into that no one told me what to do. That was the entire goal. Let me just do something where no one, because in TV, people tell you what to do every day, you know, mm-hmm. which is work. It's TV. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just, you know, that's what it is.
Right.
So I still to this day, wake up every day and ask myself, why is someone going to watch what I put out there? So the point of Brunch Boys was, okay, I want to make this food travel show. Cool. Why would people watch this food travel show? Well, is it going to be because I have the greatest production of all time? No. Is it going to be because I'm the greatest on-camera talent of all time? No.
Yes.
No. So it's like, okay, well, then what's the reason? So it's like, okay, well, let's be different. Hmm. All right. How do we be different? There's a million food travel shows. So at the time, I have always loved brunch and it was still very much, it was growing, but it's still very like New York, whatever thing.
Right.
And I knew that specifically because every time I would pitch a brunch concept on a show I was working on, we would be told, no, that's that's too East Coast, West Coast. No one in Middle America knows what brunch is. Forget about it. So I was like, okay, well, if Food Network and the bigger networks have decided that brunch isn't worth their time, that will then make me stand out because I know the bigger players won't touch it because they've told me they won't touch it. And that was the whole idea. I'm like, cool. I love brunch. Everyone I know loves brunch. I'm only making videos for my friends to watch.
You brought this to networks?
Like, no, but when I was on, but when I, so I'd be on a food travel show and we'd be going to, I don't know, we were going to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And a lot of my job was finding restaurants and pitching concepts. And for the show, you'd pitch up to your executive at the network and they'd sign off on it, whatever. And I love brunch and I would love brunch food. And every time I pitched a restaurant that I found, and I was like, this brunch dish is insane. We have to feature this. I'd be told nobody cares about brunch. We're not putting it on.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So it's just the bigger idea of brunch. So I was like, all right, cool. If you guys don't want to do it, I'll be the only brunch food focused thing in the whole world. And that's the way I pitched myself before I had any following. Like if I need to go to, I need to film a restaurant and I had nothing to go off of. So I just said, well, I'm the number one brunch, whatever in the whole world. And I was, yeah. I had 10 people watching, but I was, cause I was the only one.
Yeah, no, you found a niche. And so when was that shift of like, okay, this is like a hobby and now I'm actually gonna make this a career?
It's just when people started paying me, because it wasn't a thought to ever be a career. But then basically what happened was I needed a break from TV. I'd been on the road for months and I was just like totally fucking burnt out. And once on your TV resume, it shows that you could go on the road, they really wanna hire you because it's hard to find producers that are willing to just give up their lives for months on end. Yeah. So I just only got job offers to go back on the road. And I was like, I really can't right now. Like I want to be in New York. And like my Instagram account was growing, but like, it was cool that I was growing, but it meant nothing because no one ever made any money or no one ever did anything with it. So I didn't think about it. It was like, that's cool. But so I was like, you know, I'll take 2 or 3 months off and not even two or three months. I'll take like a month and a half off because it's towards the end of the year anyway. And odds are in December, you're not getting on a show. I was like, I'll play this little brunch boys thing. People are paying attention. It could be just a fun creative outlet, just sort of like re-energize. And when it took off, people around me started making money and people were like, you're really close. Like you can make money. And it still was never thought to do it full time because I never imagined I could make enough money for it to be full time. Cause even then no one was doing it full time. Mm-hmm. But people started paying me and the benefit of never making money in TV is that I immediately made more money doing this than I did in TV. And I was like, all right, well, I'm already making more money. I'm still producing. I still get to do what I'm passionate about. And no one tells me what to do. I'm like, well, it would be silly to go back to TV. And the thing with TV too, is like, I could always just go back. I never quit my job. My gig ended and I said no to a bunch of other jobs. So mentally is a much easier thing of like, I guess I'll just ride this out and till people stopped paying me, but that was like 6 or 7 years. So it hasn't stopped yet.
Yeah, no, that's good. And it's also nice, like as much as having full control could be a lot, it's also nice in a lot of aspects that you get to kind of like set your own dollar and make your own schedule. So I think that freedom is what a lot of people aspire to have. So I think that's
good. I mean, like I always say, like I definitely work more now that it's in TV, but it's just a different mentally when it's like, okay, like, you know, on shows, I would have to get to set at 5:30 in the morning and get home at 10 or whatever it is. But like, yeah, I might work more now, but no one's telling me to. It's totally different. Like I could wake up in the morning and be like, I'll sleep an extra hour today. Not that I make the decision every morning, but just mentally knowing that I can.
Right.
It's just totally different. But there's also no separation. At least on a show, you can kill, basically on a show, your whole thing was like, kill yourself for like 3 weeks of filming, have the rap party, have the best time of your life. And then mentally the show's over. You're fucking done. Unless you could go into post on a show, but generally I didn't work on post on a show. So I'd be done, moving on, free my mind, on to the next thing. I can't really do that now. Mm-hmm. I can't really just be like, I'm going to step away for a little bit because nothing would happen. Nothing would be happening. Like I got to make content every day. You could take little breaks here and there, but there's no fully washing your hands of what you're doing now, which is different mentally.
When you feel burnout or you feel like, you know, cause I'm sure you have, or maybe not, but if you have moments where like, it's becoming like, okay, I have to create content every day. Like how do you take time just for yourself?
I honestly try and listen to my body. I used to be a lot more crazy about it. This is a lesson from COVID of like, oh, because I really couldn't produce the amount of content that I wanted to during legit lock. Like I was locked down in my apartment, clearly couldn't go to restaurants. Mm-hmm. So it was the first time ever I just like couldn't produce. And then I realized I'm like, huh, it's not really that, like no one seems to care that I'm putting out videos every day. And yes, for algorithm purposes and for my growth, it's better to post every single day. But I just kind of realized like, mentally and physically, you know, I've been doing this for 7 years and, you know, I've been doing this full time for 6-7 years. So like I started doing this when I was 29 full time, I guess, and I'm going to be 35 this year. It's a big difference.
Sure.
And so I think just physically and mentally you start to just be like, you know what? I could slow down a touch and everything will be fine. And that was a positive lesson from everything.
Yeah. And then when now I know you're producing on YouTube, TikTok. I think those are like, cause you do, that's where the video content mainly lives.
Yeah. Yeah. God, everything goes everywhere. TikTok has been doing really well. YouTube's there. Instagram is the bread and butter. Stuff goes to Facebook. Stuff goes to Pinterest. Stuff goes to, there's a new app every day. There's an app called Rizzle. I mean, like it's all basically the same content. So it's not incredibly hard for me to post on all these platforms. It takes little tweaks here and there, but it's essentially the same content. So it's easier than it was, where every platform used to be super different. They're all sort of the same.
Yeah. And I think also with like the whole, you know, since 2020, like a lot of brands have pivoted where I think they realized like they don't have to put out every single day. I think like you can put out like less consistent or consistently, yeah, but a less amount. And I think it still works. So
there's also just people follow so many people.
Right.
I don't want to overwhelm my content. It was different a few years ago when I was one of the few people that was doing this. Cool. Oh, another food video. How exciting. Now it's like, oh, another food video. Like, yeah, you and everyone else on this fucking planet. So it's like, I try and just be like, okay, I'm not going to put stuff out just for the sake of putting stuff out. I'm going to put stuff out if content that I'm happy with. And if that means doing 3 shoots a week as opposed to 5 shoots a week, great. I'll take my time with it and make sure like it's really what I want it to be.
Yeah. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about actual food on this podcast. So let's go into that. So when it comes to food travel, what are like some of your top, let's do like top 3 favorite cities to go visit for eating?
All of Japan. We'll say Tokyo, I guess. That would be number one. Like I was just having this conversation with someone today when they asked me what my favorite stuff. I was like, no, Japan, everything Japan, everything you could ever imagine has been perfected in Japan. Best pizza. Some of the best pizza I've ever had, Japan. Go in goddamn 7-Eleven, the best tuna sandwich I've ever had, Japan. So unfortunately we're not allowed there, but when we can, that would be top of the list. Mm-hmm. I mean, not counting New York, obviously. New York is always number one. LA is great because one, it's so giant. It's so diverse. It's so easier for chefs to take more risks out there than it is in New York, just because of space and money and rent and blah, blah, blah. It's gotten harder, but it's still generally easier. And also just think that the where you see like the different ethnicities in LA, I think it's a little bit just more like my style of food than in New York, where in New York, in LA, it's all about like legit Mexican food and some like legit Asian food, more specifically Chinese food. Like, damn, I love it. I love it, love it, love it. We're in New York, we didn't have the same kind of influx that they did there. So that's great. And then, it might be Miami right now. Like Miami, we always sort of made fun of like every restaurant there is big and gigantic and kind of stupid, which it sort of still is, but they've been opening up just like killer restaurants. And a lot of them are New York restaurants, to be fair.
Yeah.
But they've been crushing down there and they've opened up some really cool food halls and like the traditional Cuban stuff that I really love. I'm dying to get back there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Noted. Now what's like a city that besides Japan, like that you would love, that you haven't been before that you want to go check out?
There's a lot of international places I want to go. I'm dying to go to Mexico City. But in America, Houston, is not thought of as like the super diverse place, but actually is really super diverse. And what I found when I did a lot of research for TV and now is the cities that are really great for letting migrants in, I guess, ends up having this crazy diversity in food that you would never think. Mm-hmm. So like Minneapolis is an amazing food city because they had all these, they let in all these people that needed a place to live. And now they're just like exploding in things you would never think. And Houston is that same sort of way where they've been such an amazing city to allow these people to come live there, that the food scene is really diverse and really interesting and really cool. So I really want to get there.
Yeah. I'm actually going to Austin, Texas, in a few months. I was supposed to go in December, but had to cancel. But kind of to your point, there's this, I know there's one really famous restaurant there. I think it's a Japanese restaurant. I think it's called Uchi.
So Uchi is one. It's probably my favorite sushi.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
They opened in Miami also. Like Miami has taken the best of everything. But yeah, Uchi, I shot a show with Uchi years ago. That's how I ended up discovering it. It was so good. When I was just in Austin a year ago now, I ordered in Uchi like every night.
Yeah, but I think to your point though, like maybe people, when you think of Austin, you don't think of like a sushi place maybe being like a number one spot, but it was able to grow in the popularity because of that very fact that like you wouldn't think of that. So,
well, what I tell people too, when they're like, where is the ocean? It's like, dude, the best sushi fish is flown in from Japan. Guess what? The plane gets to Austin before it gets to New York. So you're getting more fresh fish in Austin than you would. We're not fishing out of the goddamn, some of it's out of Atlantic Ocean. We're not fishing that tuna out of Atlantic Ocean eating. It's flying in from Japan.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way, actually. That's a good point. love it. All right. So, okay, let's do, so sushi places. So obviously, you know, you're a New Yorker. What are your favorite sushi spots in New York?
All right. Well, here's the thing about when I eat sushi in New York. I've not ever done like an amazing, beautiful like omakase in New York, because I find that like it's hard for me to justify that cost. So I'll do it when I travel. But in New York, I think it's this believe. One, I'm in Williamsburg. I order in from Kanahashi all the time. It is admittedly not the best sushi in the whole world, but it is like really great New York City delivery sushi. Mm-hmm. Like it's on that level. Very good. And then in Manhattan, I love going to Kotobuki.
Oh yeah.
There's no better like value of like good. I call it New York City sushi. It's rolls. It's fun rolls. You're not going there for the omakase experience. Well, the fish quality is still really great. That's not why you go there. You go there for like fun, really good rolls. Not that expensive at all. And I fucking love it.
Yeah. Are you, I feel like this can go either way. I'm a huge Bond Street person, but I don't know if you are.
Yeah, I like it. It's not what when I'm in New York City, it's not what I want. Like I want Kotobuki.
Okay. Okay. You know? Yeah. When it's speaking of omakase, like, have you done one of those experiences in Japan where like you are like in a very private room and it's like a whole situation? Have you ever done that?
Yeah. So when I was in Japan, we did one like legit expensive omakase. We did it when we were in Kyoto, and it's really cute. It's like a little tiny restaurant, six seats. So they have like two servings a night. You're with like, you know, whoever the four of the people, whoever they are. And yeah, it's like a husband, wife. The husband is me behind the counter, cutting, slicing away, cooking stuff. And the wife is making you drinks. And it was, awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Yeah, I feel like if like I can justify the price for those, like especially if you're in Japan, like you got to go all out if you're like, you know, traveling to a place like that. So I think
exactly. Even like I've done some in LA. Like, yeah, when you travel, you're like, oh, I'm on vacation. Then maybe spend the money. In New York, like, oh man, do I want to spend the money? Like, I'm happy with Kotobuki. Do we need this? Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, okay, back to New York. So, cause a lot of my listeners are from New York. So if you're, you know, or for those listening that are not from New York, you're coming to New York, like what are spots that like you have to hit? Like, what are your recommendations?
To me, it's just like the classics and the stuff that like New York does. Like you need a New York City bagel. Cause I've tried bagels all over the world. And while like, I really love, I love Montreal bagels that I had in Montreal. Those aren't New York City bagels. You can only get New York City bagels in New York City. Mm-hmm. Get New York City bagel, Thompson Square, Essa Bagel. Brooklyn Bagel in Chelsea. That kind of stuff is all basically, they're all basically the same, essentially. Just make sure it's the top echelon of bagels, you'll be good. Joe's Pizza, like there's nothing better in New York City slice. And another thing where I've had an insane pizza everywhere I've traveled. But again, there's a distinction to like a New York City slice that I haven't been able to find anywhere else. And then even like, you know, old school Italian delis, old school Jewish delis, go to, what's it called? Fico's in the Village, man, go to fucking Katz's. People are like, oh, tourist trap. It's like, I understand a lot of tourists go there, but like, there's a reason they've been open for 150 years or whatever. Like I went there a few months ago, the sandwiches are insane. And yes, I don't think people should wait online for anything. So my advice is just like go for breakfast and walk right in and not deal with the line. But you will never have a like better smoked meat sandwich in the world than going to Katz's.
Noted, noted. I've actually never had a smoked meat sandwich from Katz. I'll be sure to try
that. It's so good. I mean, I'm a big brisket person. It's just it's unbelievable. Or the corned beef, like pastrami, like whatever you want. Simple, easy. The French fries too. Yeah, it's great.
Amazing. Okay, cool. What are some of your, like, if you're doing a date night, like what are some of your spots you love hitting up?
To me, dates, I just want to drink. I can't drink and eat. Here's the thing. I can't eat and drink. It just makes me like not feel good. I just want to go to sleep. I'm not like a pleasant person to be around when I'm eating and drinking. I'm just like, whatever. This place, Williamsburg, Nikki's Unisex. It's great. It's just like good cocktails, great bartenders, really like cool. Like it's always like has really nice energy without being, it could get crazy, but generally it's not like insane. Mm-hmm. That's really good. Empion Taqueria is Empion Taqueria. No, sorry. Empion Alba Store, in East Village is great. The best margaritas in New York City. It's a fun bar. And if you get hungry and you really need food, you could order tacos in the back too. So it's the best of both worlds.
Okay, good. And last one, brunch, if you got to go to a place for brunch, where are you going?
I love the different brunches. Probably Sunday in Brooklyn. It's so good. It's just like everything is like elevated, but it's still like such like a brunch scene and vibe. And like, there's nothing you can get on that menu that's going to be bad, whether it's like something simple like the pancakes or even like someone that was today was like, oh, I want to go get steak and eggs. I'm like, dude, go to Sunday in Brooklyn. They're renovated for the next few weeks. So that recommendation did not work out for her. But in general, and you could brunch there every single day, which is great.
Okay, cool. And then what are your plans just to wrap up? Like, what do you hope for this coming year for yourself, your brand? You could do personal, professional, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's always just like, new audience, where can I find them? To me, it's like, there's only so much you can grow via an algorithm. And that's so like not in your control. To me, it's like getting my face out there and doing more projects. Like I've been directing some more projects, which is cool. It was a challenge that I took on last year. Because I hadn't worked on an outside project truly since I left TV 6 or 7 years ago, but I was given the opportunity to direct these videos for Vogue and Instagram for the Met Gala. And I was like, well, I can't turn down that deal. And it's great. It was like, oh, wow. Like, I don't know if I want this to be my full-time gig, but to take projects like that, that come up is really exciting because I love it, whether I'm on camera or not. Like I really am passionate about it. But the flip side of that too, find some on-camera stuff, because at the same time, it is such a relief to just like show up to set and not do anything, but just like eat and talk. And like, I've had usually every year to some fun project that comes up, lets me be on camera for that. Like I hosted a show for MSG. I hosted a show for Thrillist. I did a lot of work at Disney World, which is airing. If you go stay at a Disney World resort, you'll see me on their TV. So stuff like that is fun for me and it is great exposure. I don't really think I want it to be a TV show necessarily, although I don't say no to anything. To me, it's just like digital outlets and online stuff. It's just a different type of pressure than a full-on TV show. Like a full-on TV show, I'd have to give up what I'm doing now. Digital projects that come up here and there are just more fun for me and are better for what I'm doing. So that kind of stuff is always stuff that I'm looking out for.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm excited to just see what's to come. I'm definitely going to hit up a P.F. Chang's because you inspired me to do that.
But they're not in New York City. This is why I had to go to Westchester. Although yeah. I think that P.F. Chang's to go in New York City. I don't know what that means, but they wanted me to show up the full restaurant experience. That's why I had to go to Westchester. But
yeah, cool. Well, I'm excited. I'm going to go to check out your recommendations and definitely go to Katz Deli soon. But thanks so much for coming on. This was so much fun.
Yeah, of course. Anytime.
Thanks. All right. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. As always, please be sure to subscribe so you're the first to hear when new episodes come out. Rate and review. Please give me 5 stars. It would mean the world. And I also love getting your feedback. And don't forget to follow along for more at Small Talk with Sid or STWS Media for more podcast-related content. All of Jeremy's info will be in the description if you want to learn more. But until then, I will chat with you guys next time. Have a great one. Bye.